the big 2-3. No one's ever said that. There's no such thing as a big 2-3. But at least in basketball, 23 means something with, you know, Michael Jordan and all the other players that have worn the number. Episode 23, Bright Side of the Sun, Phoenix Suns podcast here on brightsideofthesun.com. Chris Habas, as always, Jim Kochenour on the line, as always. We're going to go ahead and banter your ears off here for a little bit, talking Suns news and notes. We're going to break down the coaching stuff here. We are going to do that here in just a little bit. But first, I want to jump right into it, Jim. We did semi-playoff predictions last week. I think each series had a game in the books, maybe. But we did basically playoff predictions last week for what we thought the final four were going to be. I think both of us are going to end up being 75% right in our picks. Each of us is right on one series, or rather wrong on one series, and each of us look like we're probably going to end up being right on three of the series. How are you doing, first off, and what are you feeling with the playoffs so far?
I picked Memphis over Oklahoma City. I knew that they were basically done when Westbrook went down. A lot of people seem to undervalue Westbrook's worth to that team, the role he plays, the what he provides. But I wasn't under a similar illusion and knew that was just going to be a crippling loss. Westbrook is one of the 10 best players in the league, and you can't just lose a player like that and expect to maintain your momentum. So last week I had actually picked Memphis, and not only for this round, but I like them to go to the finals now. I had had OKC previously, but that injury derailed my pick there. The Spurs, I had said, were going to win that series, and at that time, based on the fact that Golden State just really choked away game one, that was their game, it was in hand, and they gave it away, and that the Spurs just don't really give teams second chances. Now, the Warriors are still making that a very competitive series, and it's still not necessarily decided either way, so the Game 5 at San Antonio, I think, is going to be the deciding factor there, and I still think the Spurs are going to win that. The Heat Bulls I thought would be a little bit more competitive, but I had the Heat, and obviously the Heat have turned that into a laugher, and I had called the Pacers-Knicks series kind of a toss-up. I had the Knicks going to the Eastern Conference Finals headed into the playoffs, so I stuck with them, and that one's not looking quite so solid to me now.
Yeah, and you know what? One thing that I can be boisterous about a little bit is I liked Indiana as the second best team in the East from the second they lost to Miami in the second round last year. I really liked what Indiana had as a roster. I liked how they played, liked how Vogel was coaching. Paul George I've always saw him as a superstar. I had him as the second best player in the John Wall draft, which most people probably think is crazy. Go back and look at that draft. You probably think I'm crazy, and now you probably don't. But I had Indiana. I like what they're doing right now. I genuinely think with the way that, you know, New York is acting mentally in terms of the playoff series so far, that it's very likely that just ends in five. I mean, I'm not just going to sit here and go they're going to fall apart and the Knicks are terrible. They're good. They became the 2 seed for a reason. They battled with Indiana all season for that. But, you know, I mean, they're in Indiana for game four. Indiana take care of business at home. And then New York doesn't have the strongest mental capacity when you look at that roster. So I can see that one easily ending in five. And the one that I was wrong on, so you're going to end up potentially, you know, right now you're down on the Indiana-New York series, and that's the one that, you know, I was right on. I still thought Oklahoma City had a chance to win that series against Memphis, not discrediting or not, you know, giving enough value to Russell Westbrook. I give him plenty of value. I just looked at the way that Memphis was playing offensively throughout the season, and I just saw it as a situation where that all the team has to do is, you know, keep it, you know, get 80 to 85 points, and then in the final 2 minutes, Kevin Durant would win them games. What I did this when I looked at that series, the one thing that I probably didn't do was give enough value to Tony Allen and that perimeter defense that they have out there. And as much as I love Tony Allen, they got three defensive all-teamers on the roster with Mike Conley, Tony Allen, and Mark Gasol, the defensive player of the year. Three all-defensive team members on that roster. I got to ask you a question. This is a shameless plug, but when you look at the Memphis Grizzlies and you watch the way they play, do they remind you at all, a lot, a little, of the way that 04 Pistons team was, with just a group effort on offense, kind of a band of guys that with no superstar and just great defense? Does it just kind of feel like that 04 Pistons team? Because I put a pen to paper on that for Dime Magazine, and I'm starting to feel like this is very, very similar to the 04 Pistons.
In some ways, I think they definitely resemble that team. I don't think that they're quite as physical. They're close, but even in terms of the present-day landscape, I think that the Pacers and the Bulls play a little bit more with more physicality. Randolph is obviously a bruiser, but Gasol, I don't think, quite bangs as well. The Pistons had great defense. They had Wallace anchoring that in the middle. Mike Conley's kind of coming into his own, but the Pistons still had better leadership, better strength. I think Billups was either 1 or 1A on that team at the point. So a little bit different, but I think there are definitely similarities. And in terms of, you know, a team with not necessarily one definable star, but still being able to control pace, play good defense, do a lot of those things well. And if they actually get to the NBA Finals, it's pretty rare that a team without one of your top five, top ten players in the league can really achieve that. So I can definitely see similarities there.
Yeah, and I wouldn't even say that it's rare. I would say that it's the anomaly. It's the outlier for those kind of teams. I mean, teams that don't have a superstar, or let's just call them teams that don't have a 20-point-per-game scorer as their leading scorer, getting to the finals and winning an NBA championship, there's four of them in the last 25 years. Three times it was Detroit, ironically, in 04, in 1990, and in 1989, with Richard Hamilton, Isaiah Thomas, and Adrian Dantley as the respective leading scorers. And then, if you want to count the Celtics in 2008 with Paul Pierce averaging a touch under 20 at 19.6. But you're right. I mean, I don't think anybody looks at the roster of the Memphis Grizzlies and go, you might even be able to take it to top 20. I don't know if any of those players are necessarily a top 20 player in the NBA, let alone a top 10 player. But, yeah, when you look at the last 25 years, almost every single year, whether it's a Dirk, whether it's a Kobe, a LeBron, a Shaq, a Jordan, I think those are the only names that I need to say out loud. Oh, Duncan, there you go. And then that's all of them. There's always a leading scorer, a guy that's getting you 25 to 30 a night. And they're basically carried by having a quality defense, having, you know, decent enough role players and one guy that goes out there and wins you games. But with this Grizzlies team, with the Pistons teams of past, with other teams, you look at it and you go, you can build a team kind of slowly, kind of subtly, kind of unassuming. You know, you trade for Marc Gasol, you get lambasted for it. You bring in the knucklehead, as he might have been, you know, the guy that was with the Trailblazers and never reached his potential in Randolph. You trade for a Tayshaun Prince. You go and get Tony Allen, who has championship pedigree and is an elite defender. You piece together your bench through the draft. You get Mike Conley through the draft as well. Nobody on that roster is arguably top 15, definitely not top 15, arguably not top 20, and yet they're a team that probably is the biggest threat to the Miami Heat for a championship, especially if Dwayne Wade's not healthy. I'll tell you right now, Dwayne Wade at 80% or less against the Memphis Grizzlies in the NBA Finals, I'm crowning the Memphis Grizzlies the champions if that's the case. If Wade's, you know, over 80%, 90 to 100, somewhere in there, Miami's still the team to beat. But that Grizzlies team matches up well against them, which, when you look at, you know, shifting gears, we're the Phoenix Suns podcast. When you're the Phoenix Suns, you either land a superstar, you become Miami, you become Oklahoma City, you know, San Antonio with Duncan. You can draft a superstar, get him through free agency, and build around that guy. Or you can build kind of like the way that the Memphis Grizzlies have, like the Pistons of past have, and use your draft picks, use free agency, bring together a collective group, and either it meshes to a championship contender or it turns you into a really good team with a lot of good assets. And that's what this team needs to do when you start looking forward with the NBA draft coming up with free agency. But before you can get into that, we got to play the deconstruction game with the roster. And during Christmas time, we gave out Christmas gifts to all the Suns players. Now I feel like it's appropriate to give out some parting gifts. I know this was your idea, Jim, to give some parting gifts to the Phoenix Suns players. So we divided out the roster and we said, hey, let's go ahead and, you know, give these guys a pat on the back on their way out the door and a gift in their hands, or at least during the offseason, give them something. Let's go ahead and jump into it right away. I'm going to go ahead and let you take the helm because I feel like I've talked for too long in a row right now. Let's go ahead and start off with some parting gifts for the Phoenix Suns. Jim, you got the floor.
Okay. Yeah, you were a little bit long-winded there, Chris.
That's how I roll.
To touch back on that Memphis thing real quick, and then I'll get into this. Correct me if maybe my perception is a little bit off base here. Do you kind of get the feeling that Memphis is a team that plays really good defense, but they don't have the dirty label associated with them like a lot of good defensive teams are. You kind of get that vibe that they play good defense, but they play it in a way that fans don't see as really bruising, punishing, dirty type of ball.
Yeah, they play that advanced stats 2010 to now version of defense where everyone does something right. And you're right, it's not Ben Wallace throwing shots into the upper deck, and it's not, you know, John Starks putting his leg underneath jump shooters. It's just legit good defense, and it's, for all you stat heads out there, Memphis playing well is, you know, that's your crowning achievement right there. That's a very advanced stats-oriented team.
Okay, well, I will jump back into the parting gifts like you had led us into, and just to let everybody know, I'm just going down the list by alphabetical order. I'm not trying to show favoritism to anybody on the roster, and I'm going to start off with somebody who most definitely does not play good defense in the spirit of the Memphis Grizzlies, and that is Michael Beasley. And for his parting gift, I got him a list of the telephone numbers of the other 29 general managers in the league. I think that this will be a handy reference for him and his agent if he's trying to seek gainful employment around the league after the Suns dump his ass this summer. So, you know, to be honest with you, I know the Suns already have all these numbers, so I didn't have to spend any effort to track all of them down because, frankly, it wouldn't have been worth my effort. And, you know, I sure as hell wasn't going to spend any money on a gift for Beasley. And he, you know, still gets to collect all his lucrative paychecks anyway, which is basically stealing based on his performance last season. So at least this will give him a shot to maybe find another destination after he hopefully exits ours.
Yeah, I feel like with that gift, you spent about as much time and effort perfecting the craft of that list of phone numbers as Beasley did on analyzing defenses and putting forth effort on the defensive end. It's kind of funny, as Lindsey Hunter said, when he's engaged on defense, he's great on offense. I don't think we got either of those things this season. We got some okay offense, and we didn't get much engagement on the defensive end. Another guy that, as you mentioned, Michael Beasley, you know, parting shot. He's a guy that hopefully the team is patting on the back on the way out the door. Thanks for your time here. You know, please exit stage left. We do not need your services anymore. Best of luck in your future endeavors. That's Michael Beasley. That's a few guys on this list, unfortunately. But the team's got to rebuild, and part of the rebuilding is the next guy on the list became a fan favorite without really playing a game down the stretch. He was probably the most mishandled Phoenix Suns player in a long time. He would go from 12 DNPs to getting in the game in the first quarter to 5 DNPs to getting in there for clutch crunch time minutes with the team down by a few at the end of the game. Made no sense. Lindsey Hunter just kind of threw him out there willy-nilly. But Shannon Brown, I actually want to give him two gifts, and they're very small. They're not very expensive, so I'm able to afford these on my humble salary. Shannon Brown, I'm going to go ahead and give you two gifts. One, I'm going to give you a pack of Red Bull, because with Red Bull, not even Lindsey Hunter can stop Shannon Brown from flying. Those right there will give him wings. He will be able to fly. And when he's got those wings attached, I went ahead and handed him, with the Red Bull, a year pass, or at least a summer pass, to whatever local YMCA Boys and Girls Club he would like to attend so he can get on the basketball court and break off of that rust that he hasn't, you know, been on the court in quite a while because he was mismanaged. So some Red Bull so we can finally let Shannon fly, and then a pass so he can get out on a basketball court, maybe on a YMCA court or a Boys and Girls Club court. He can go out there and be the 30-point scorer that he thinks he is.
Yeah, he actually might have a chance to dominate in that type of setting, even though he could probably still manage to mess things up by playing his hero ball and finding a way to chuck up a terribly more difficult shot than he needs to, even against an inferior defender. So that's a good thing, the Red Bull. That was Brown's basically only plus-level talent at an NBA level was his athleticism. So to help him build upon that, I think, is very gracious of you. I am going next to Goran. And just like you gave two gifts to Shannon, ironically, I have a combo gift for Goran also. And this is because I really want him to succeed here. So it's not a congratulatory gift. It's something to help him build on his future success here in Phoenix. So first, what I've done is set up appointments for Dragic with an assertiveness training counselor. I think that can help him really step up in the clubhouse and try to become more of the leader that he needs to be. And then the second part of that, and helping him with the exact same types of goals, is I have enrolled him in an American Management Association leadership training seminar. So the team needs a leader. Goran is right at that age. He's the team's best player. He fits into that mold, and I'm really hoping that these will help him take that step up and become that person for this franchise moving forward.
Absolutely, and I think Goran will appreciate two gifts with an emphasis on leadership. I think he gets the point there with that one, and they could have definitely used a leader. One of the leaders during the season, or at least perceived leaders developed into it as a leader with the loss of Grant Hill and Steve Nash, was Jared Dudley. And Jared is a guy that nobody wants to see go, so we're not patting him on his back and telling him, you know, thanks and best of luck. We all like Jared out here. He does a great job for the team. Very honest, you know, very good leader, and I think he does a good job for this team. But the one thing that he never got was consistency with his role. You know, throughout his tenure here, he was either a starting shooting guard, a backup three, a starting three, and then a backup shooting guard. You know, getting random DNPs, asked to create shots in January, but then would never get shots after he had the hottest month of his career in February. So what we're going to get for Jared, very simple, and it's going to come with the coach that comes in. We're hopefully going to bring in a player's coach, and we'll get to that here in just a little bit, talking about the coaching search. But within the realm of getting a player's coach, getting Jared a more defined role. So just go ahead and etching Jared's name in Webster-Merriam and getting him, or Merriam-Webster rather, and getting him set up in there with a defined role, printed out, Jared Dudley, pronunciation like this. This is your role. And I think for Jared, it's either starting or backup three. I think that's kind of where he feels more comfortable. But we need to get him a more defined role. And I think that comes with the coaching change and kind of getting everything set up from the top as we trickle down to the bottom with the players.
Yeah, that was kind of an interesting thing this year, that his role was so undefined on a team so bad. But I'm sure that will change for him moving forward with the new coach that we have. I don't see that being up in the air like it was so much this season. My next player is Deonte Garrett, and this one I worked really hard on. So I got together with the Suns video staff, and we put together a montage of Garrett's highlights from this past season, just in case he disappears from the NBA landscape. He'll have something to remember his time as a pro. So the compilation we put together includes all the best and brightest from all of Deonte's 149 minutes he played last season. It's got some of the timeless memories, such as all three of his made three-pointers, his perfect form he displayed on the five free throws he made, and also a close-up of the shot he almost blocked.
I think that that's unfair only because you have to include the highlights from the Bakersfield Jam then. You have to add those in there because those are the highlights of his career. He went out there and was scoring 20 to 30 a night out there. But for Marcin Gortat, I got him next, and I went back and forth on two different gifts. Both of them I think are very important. The first gift is not a gift. It's actually taking something from him. I actually want to take away the Sergio Garcia, how to deal with the media and how to self-assess yourself. I'd like to take that away from Marcin Gortat because it feels like all season, everything outside of maybe here and there, it was more or less an excuse or pointing a finger on why he wasn't doing good. So first of all, I'd just like to take the Sergio Garcia book away from him because that's just, we don't need that out here. But the actual gift is going to be a big, giant bottle jar. I don't know what it comes in. It's a spray, so I'm imagining a bottle, but just as much deer antler spray as he needs. I don't know if his injury needs it, but I know that deer antler spray works miracles. So let's go ahead and just spray that all over. Let's get him nice and healthy. He's about as talented as a top 10 center in the league can be. He has that ability. He showed it at the beginning of the season. Let's get him nice and healthy so he can be that top 10 center for the Suns next year, or at least a trade asset for the team to build off of down the road.
Wow, I'm supposed to be the one that's critical and castigating. To have your name put in the same sentence as Sergio Garcia, that's pretty low. That's a tough one.
It felt topical.
I will move on, segue to Hamed Haddadi. That's my next player. And, You know, the last one I had with Garrett was a video that I helped compile. This one is a video, actually a set of videos that I didn't have any role in producing, but I still think is apropos for Hamed. What I got him is a boxed set of the Shrek movies on Blu-ray. I think he can watch these, and it'll give him some steps on how to improve his ogre human interpersonal skills. And if he can learn from these, adapt, become a little bit more fan-friendly, we shouldn't have as many children crying in the stands next season.
That could work. If I had Hamed Haddadi, my gift was really simple. It would have been the DVD for The Great Khali. For all of you people out there that are adults that know what professional wrestling is, The Great Khali is a giant freak of nature from India, and him and Hamed Haddadi have enough of a resemblance where I feel like he can learn from that big man and get some range of motion. So go ahead and Google The Great Khali, Jim, and get some Google images, and you'll see the Indian version of Hamed Haddadi. But for my next gift is our best friend, Smilin' Wes Johnson. We all love him. We all appreciated what he did. I think we all have differing opinions on whether or not he should come back, but I think management kind of made that decision for him with not giving him his rookie player option. But for Wes Johnson, I think that this gift right here is very appropriate, not only for the Suns season, and I think that we need to start selling it in the team shop, actually. It's going to be a framed picture signed by Robert Sarver. We're going to go ahead and get Charles Barkley. We're going to go ahead and get Colangelo. We're going to get all the Suns legends to go and sign this picture for Wes Johnson, because this picture belongs for Wes. He saved the season. It's a framed picture of his tip-in at the Oklahoma City game that saved the team from reaching franchise futility for the fewest points scored in a game. And maybe a nice mahogany frame. I'm thinking probably blow it up, maybe a 10 by 10, a nice wall size, big room picture, or at least a door frame size. Let's get that on the wall. Wes Johnson tipping in and, oddly enough, saving this 25-win season.
Now, was he smiling when he tipped the ball in?
I don't know. I got to go ahead and talk to the Suns photographers and see if they got a couple snaps of that. I'd like to get the image from the rafters looking down on it, because then we might be able to see. Because you got to imagine he's looking up and just pushing his fingers up in the air to try and touch the ball. So I'd love that picture if we have any rafter photographers at US Airways. But I think that picture frame will do justice for Wes. I think he'll genuinely appreciate it. And again, we should start selling that in the team shop, because that's a historical artifact.
There you go. My next player is Kendall Marshall, which seems germane based on my infatuation with him. I'm the poster boy for his fan club, based on the fact that I think that he won't be out of the league in 2 years. And what I got Kendall is a membership to Shooter's World. I figure he can't shoot. Everybody knows he can't shoot. So maybe if we get him there, he can get some target practice with some firearms, and that'll give him some confidence if he can have some ability there, and he'll be like, well, wow, I really can shoot. And then maybe that can transfer over to his basketball shot, because we got to have a way to try to build his confidence somewhere. So that's my idea.
You know what? I was just as you said that, I looked it up, and I found buy one, get one free passes. So you can actually take a buddy with you. It's like a buddy pass to Shooter's World. And at the same time, I got a text from Dr. Jay Schwartz. So PJ Tucker's gift of going and getting LASIK surgery all over again to help improve his jump shot, because he's a jump shot away from being a very, very good role player in this league. So I'm sending PJ down to get his LASIK re-examined and maybe redone, so that we can get his shot, you know, going and falling next season. So I think altogether, I think him and Kendall are both going to take a trip down to Dr. Jay Schwartz, and then they're both going to together afterwards, with their newfound vision, go and take some shooting practice together and do that. I think those guys need to buddy together, combine their gifts, and go double the fun, double the pleasure, and hopefully double the results for the Suns next year with their shooting.
That could work. Maybe some of the work ethic PJ Tucker's desire can rub off on Kendall too, to give him that edge he's going to need to survive in this league. Now, my next player I have is Markieff Morris. I got the first twin. And after watching Morris play this season and his complete lack of any discernible improvement, what I really think that Markieff needs is a wake-up call. So what I got him is a programmable alarm clock. That means no more smartphone wake-ups for Keith, no hotel courtesy calls. And what I did is recorded the message on the clock for him. And what it says is, wake your ass up or you're going to be out of the league soon. And my hope is that by hearing this every morning, that he'll be kind of proselytized, brainwashed into having this start to sink in, and maybe it'll cause some kind of impetus for him to actually take some steps forward next season.
Yeah, you know what? And I'm switching over to the next brother, and I was crossing my fingers thinking that Twin Magic was going to rub off on us and we were going to give the same gift to the brothers, because we did not come together on this at all. And for Markeith and for Marcus, I think this would make some sense, but I'm going to split them up because together, apart, very average NBA players. Doesn't really matter, as we've seen so far through a couple of years. But what I got for Marcus, and this could go very well, so he's going to come back and give some advice to Markeith. Maybe Markeith will come and do this next summer, is a trip down to Hakeem World in Texas. We're going to send Marcus all the way back to Texas. I know he had some fond memories there in Houston. And we're going to go ahead and have him work with Hakeem Olajuwon. We've already seen, yes, we get it. You know, Marcus, you're 6'8", and you can dribble a little. You're 6'8", and you could shoot a little. Let's go ahead and teach you how to be 6'8", and play in the post. So he's going to spend the summer with Hakeem Olajuwon and maybe come back with some miniature marginalized version of the Dream Shake and maybe a little bit of a post game.
There you go. And the Suns have that history of using Texas as a D-League. So maybe now that he's actually been here, we can kind of send him back a little bit, and we can keep that trend going. Because so far last year, it didn't work just getting him from Texas. So obviously the first step in that would be sending him to Texas. And now maybe we can correct that order of operation error we had this past season.
There you go.
With Luis Scola, this is my final gift. And it wasn't a very fun season for Luis. I looked, and he actually came off the bench 15 times last season, and this is for the fourth worst team in the NBA. Scola had started every game he played in the previous four seasons, so his stats were basically right on par with where they had been, so it's not like he had some huge regression. So, you know, just I'm sure that had to be kind of tough for Luis to swallow. He is not used to this futility, not used to that. And so what I got Luis, since he's 33 years old and he's not going to learn a whole lot of new tricks, he's getting to be an old dog there, a little bit wizened, is a larger-than-life thank you card. And what I intend on doing is trying to have all the contributors, the commenters, the readers on Brightside sign this card for Luis, for Scola, to thank him for the professionalism and effort he brought to such a terrible team and not giving up despite all of his frustration.
Yeah, you know what? And that kind of falls in line with my last gift for Jermaine O'Neal. I think that's very appropriate. And with Jermaine O'Neal, this is not a gift I can give him, and I apologize. I'm digging into the basket that is that doesn't have this. But for Jermaine O'Neal, for everything he's been through this year, for everything that he's put up with, for all the stuff with his family, which is unfortunate, but, you know, obviously had a positive outtake there at the end. But for Jermaine O'Neal, I'd like to go ahead and give him, in some way, as best I can, I'm going to find a way to do this, an NBA championship. Because, you know, maybe Gambo thinks he's a goon. That's his opinion. I don't really care. But I think Jermaine O'Neal, from the time spent with the Phoenix Suns, I think he's a pretty good guy. I think he's a pretty good leader. I think he's a guy that has put in his dues in the NBA and deserves his trip to winning an NBA championship. And, you know, chased one with Miami, chased one with Boston, came to Phoenix for I'm not sure why. And I think he's a guy that deserves a championship. So hopefully a first-class ticket to South Beach to go hook up with the Heat, you know, reunite over there and be productive for them. They need some big bodies. Oklahoma City, you know, Golden State Warriors are looking nice. So, you know, just get him on a roster that has a chance of winning a championship, because I think he, more than anybody on this current roster, because he's obviously put in his time, deserves an NBA championship and a chance to say that he's an NBA champion. Those are our parting gifts. Comical, but I think all of them serve a purpose, just like with our Christmas gifts that we gave back in December. Go back and check that podcast out if you want to see what those gifts were. But for sake of time, we're going to jump into the coaching stuff just a little bit here, and then we're going to go ahead and we're going to cut this one off and jump into the coaching stuff next week. But Jim, I definitely wanted to touch base on it. A small list of coaches were sent out by Gambo, as we mentioned before, from 620, where he said that this is the group that is going to be the candidate list for the Phoenix Suns coaching job. It was not confirmed with anyone within the organization. On my end, I wasn't able to get anyone to confirm or deny it, but the list from Ryan McDonough, our new GM, and hopefully this is the list because I kind of like some of these guys and kind of don't like some of them, but Brian Shaw, as you all know from Laker fame, current Pacers assistant coach. You have Mike Budenholzer from the San Antonio Spurs, been a lifer there in terms of an assistant coach. Kelvin Sampson, who was the interim for the Houston Rockets while Kevin McHale was out dealing with personal issues. He's an assistant there. And then also Quinn Snyder, who spent some time on a Lakers bench and has been coaching in Russia for the past year. When you hear that list, does that provoke any excitement from you, Jim, at all? And is that a list that you see some positive from?
Yeah, to go real quick down some of the candidates there that you just listed without taking a bunch of time. Brian Shaw fits the profile of an overachiever during his pro career, and he has assistant coaching experience between the Lakers and the Pacers, which were both very good teams, so he's been around a winning culture. The Pacers, like we had alluded to earlier in the podcast, have kind of built something pretty special there, so that's a plus for him being around those types of organizations. So that's kind of my quick take on Brian Shaw. Mike Budenholzer, I'm not really too infatuated with that there. It seems kind of odd, peculiar, just notable that he spent like 18 years as an assistant coach with San Antonio Spurs. So I don't know whether he's trying to stick around there and take over the reins from Popovich or what's going on there, because it just seems weird that be an assistant coach for one team for that long. You know, what are the aspirations? Where are you moving from there? It kind of strikes me as a little bit queer there.
Yeah.
Jeff Hornacek is like similar to Brian Shaw, the underachiever, everything. He's got a little bit of head coaching experience. He's had some other teams that have expressed interest with him as a head coach. So he's kind of been on with the Jazz as an assistant the last couple years, and there has been some interest. He's a guy who I'd at least like to be interviewed, even if they don't give him the job. I think that would be a good interview. And then the other guys I don't know as much about in terms of their past. They weren't former players. They have some assistant head coaching experience on an NBA level, but I'm not going to feign like I have some, you know, vast knowledge of either of their resumes.
Yeah, I mean, with Kelvin Sampson, he's a guy that most know from coaching in college, and he's a guy that, you know, he's loved around the league. We talked about this a little bit before jumping on the podcast. He's very much a Alvin Gentry type coach where just everyone loves him. No one has anything bad to say about him. The only people that don't like him are the fans and alma mater from the colleges he coached at that might have been left and spurned in his wake in terms of having like recruiting violations, which different story, different topic, are usually jokes by the NCAA. But he's a guy that, I mean, he's loved around the league. Players really like him. They respect him. People around the league like him and respect him. So from that respect, he's a guy that is welcomed by the league, but we don't know if he has a coaching acumen for the NBA game. Has been with Houston, was the interim coach for them for a little while. They made the playoffs, so he's got some chops there, I would imagine. But that team was basically James Harden going one-on-one for the entire season in playoffs. And with Quinn Snyder, I mean, he's a guy, you know, he coached at Missouri for a little while, very fiery coach, you know, kind of reminiscent of like the Lawrence Franks and those guys that, you know, Scott Skiles, guys that get real riled up on the sideline and go to task and punch the air a lot, and really fiery guy as a head coach, a little bit younger. He's a guy that I think is a little bit more of an X's and O's coach, but maybe more of an unknown. Spent some time with the Lakers, like I said, some time in Russia, but, you know, Sampson, if you can combine him and Snyder, maybe you get a really good coach. But I think we're both in agreement that if we're looking at that list and you added Jeff Hornacek to it, we're probably ranking Shaw 1, Hornacek 2, and then whatever else with the final three. I'd like to see the job go to Hornacek. They hit a home run with Ryan McDonough. Why not swing for back-to-back home runs and try and see if you can get Brian Shaw? No one knows if he's going to be a great coach, but he's coached underneath Tex Winter's system with the Lakers under Phil Jackson and got his endorsement as his replacement as the Lakers coach. And under Frank Vogel, who is very much an analytical, new age, video room type coach. So he's got the experience from championships to playoff teams, from analytics to old school, from, you know, the triangle to the zone to great defense to great offense. He's experienced it all. So if he can put that together in some fashion, then I think that's a pretty good head coach right there.
Now, question for you. I'm going to throw a couple things out at you. Kelvin Sampson. He is 57 years old and has not been a head coach in the NBA. He's got some assistant coaching experience, like I mentioned. Does that give you any pause, kind of like the Budenholzer 18-year assistant coach type of thing gave to me? What are your thoughts about the age thing with Kelvin Sampson?
Well, the Cardinals, the Arizona Cardinals, for folks that listen to this podcast and are local, just hired a 61-year-old head coach who was a career assistant as well in Bruce Arians. So that's the feel that I would get from it is he's not as renowned around the league as a great assistant or guru at anything. He's just a liked guy. But that's what I would get from hiring a Budenholzer, or that's what I would get from hiring a Sampson. I would rather pluck an assistant that's been around, you know, try and maybe, you know, get the next Doc Rivers or get a Monty Williams type coach or, you know, go get one of these guys that can manage players, you know, give them an experienced coaching staff that can help them manage games and see if they can develop and turn into the next, you know, Greg Popovich type really good coach. But, you know, the wave of player coaches, guys that were, you know, NBA role players, and then, you know, sit on a bench and they learn how the game looks by watching superstars around them as a player and as a coach. Those are the guys that end up being really good coaches. And if Brian Shaw is any indication, or if that's any indication of how Brian Shaw is going to be, you know, he watched Kobe Bryant for a long time, Shaquille O'Neal for a long time, Phil Jackson coach. You know, he's watching Paul George out there in Indiana as they're in the playoffs as we speak. So I think that I would go with I like that. Again, I gravitated right over to Brian Shaw answering your question, but I don't get much confidence from that. But like I said, the Cardinals just hired a 61-year-old head coach who has been a career assistant. So that's kind of the same thing you get with either Kelvin Sampson or even Budenholzer, guys that are career assistants and up there in age. You're not building a future with either of those guys. I think you're just kind of hiring a coach.
Right. For me, it's just like I said, one of those situations. It's like, well, why haven't you become a head coach yet, if that's your aspiration? Brian Shaw's young. Quinn Snyder's still young. Actually, Sampson's the only guy that's really, you know, older, I guess. Not that the 57 isn't necessarily that old, but Hornacek's 50 and the rest of the candidates are in their 40s. But like we're looking at with Brian Shaw, some of these other guys, they've moved up to the ranks a little bit quicker. Just like you had said with Brian Shaw's pedigree, Hornacek had some of the pedigree with, you know, playing with great players like Malone and Stockton, but then after he had kind of taken some time off after his playing career was done, then he got to be around Jerry Sloan and do some of this stuff with the Utah organization, and now with limited coaching experience, he's already been a candidate for several jobs, or, you know, mentioned or interviewed or been around that. So just like we had the GM hiring with Magana, it seems like Shaw and Hornacek, maybe to me at least, are more of those guys that are moving up the ranks quicker and have shown a lot in a short period of time. And so maybe that kind of fits their mold with what they did with the last hiring.
Makes sense, yeah. And I think that if you're McDonough, you want to hire a guy that's young that is going to come up with you. McDonough's 33. I think there's players on the Suns that are older than him. So I think you want to go with a coach that, you know, maybe not necessarily in your age bracket, but is in your peer group in terms of being a younger guy ready to get out there and prove what he's doing. And McDonough's probably scouted Brian Shaw at one point in time in his life when he was playing. So I think he knows a lot about these different guys as coaches. So yeah, I would gravitate absolutely towards the younger quote unquote coach. And that's probably the direction I would go. So instead of this being a real quick little thing on the coaches, because we have no idea how to stop talking, that's the coaching search as it is today. Things to look forward to, Suns fans. So when we talk to you next time, it'll be on the eve of the NBA draft lottery, where we'll find out whether or not the Phoenix Suns, who are going to send Corey Gaines down to the lottery to see if he can strike luck twice and get the number one pick for both Phoenix teams. He got Brittany Griner not that long ago. Hopefully he can get the number one pick for the Suns. that's next week, so we'll talk about that. But also the NBA Draft Combine, I believe it'll be on ESPN or NBA TV over the next couple of days. It runs Wednesday through Friday, televised Thursday and Friday, respectively. Definitely, you know, jump on there, check out the guys, and see who you're liking, who you're not liking. The Combine's basically a joke, so, you know, enjoy watching those guys run around and half-heartedly do stuff. But at least we'll get measurements, we'll get interviews, you'll get to see these guys, you know, on a basketball court and kind of get a feel for them. That's what you got coming up this week. Jim, any parting shots for the folks out there on Brightside?
Yeah, we definitely need to coordinate so that we can record while the lottery selection show is on. That way everybody can hear me just curse up a storm when the Suns end up with the sixth pick.
It's okay. Charlotte will find a way to get the sixth pick. I think we'll stay in the top four. So for some reason, the NBA hates the Charlotte Bobcats, unless Emeka Okafor or something like that's on the board for them. But there's that, guys. That's episode 23. Keep this in mind. We're 2 wins off of the Phoenix Suns win total this year. I feel like that's a celebration. It'll not only be episode 25, but it'll match the win total. We got to do something big for that, Jim. But for this week, episode 23, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you guys next week.